Good afternoon. You're listening to Critical Mass, the radio show, streaming live to you today on octalkradio.net. Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 4 p.m. sharp, we bring you an interactive one-hour show with top business thought leaders from the Orange County business community. This show is dedicated to topics that CEOs and business owners need to know more about to take their business to the next level. And it's a natural extension of the CEO peer groups that my business partner, Rick Franzi, and I, Doug Feller, have been creating and facilitating for 16 years here in Orange County, California, all under the banner of Renaissance Executive Forums. These forums are an opportunity for like-minded business executives to meet and work on problems that are common to all businesses today. If you'd like to know more about CEO peer groups or executive forums, you need to read Rick's book on the topic. Title, same as the radio show, Critical Mass, now in its third printing. And I'd highly recommend you add it to your reading list. You can find it, like everything else, on Amazon.com. Just put in Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I, under author, and it'll take you right to it. Well, we got a big show going today. Let's start right out. Our first guest today is Kevin Landry, CEO of New Horizons Computer Learning Center. Kevin's going to share with us some of the unique things they've done to capitalize on state and federal spending initiatives. And I'll tell you, this is a guy who is full of energy. Kevin, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Hey, it's our pleasure. Looking forward to it all week. So why don't we start right out? Share with our audience your path to New Horizons.
Well, out of college many, many years ago, I started out in the aerospace industry. Spent about 10-plus years working with the defense industrial complex. And in the late 80s, migrated away from that into the telecoms industry. And really hit that at a good point in time. It was in the early 90s, right when that whole dot-com technology was taking off, and got to ride the wave to the top and the bottom and back up to the top again. And that was a pretty wild time in technology back then, so we had quite a fun time at that.
Great. Well, look, tell us a little bit about your firm. Tell us about New Horizons.
Well, New Horizons Computer Learning Centers is a franchise organization. We have over 300 locations in approximately 70 countries worldwide. Our particular business unit is focused here in Southern California. We have 5 delivery centers based out of Anaheim, Burbank, Culver City, San Bernardino, and San Diego. We offer training in 3 specific areas, mainly looking at computer technology. So we try to focus on the desktop applications. We also look at the high-end IT training, which really makes the back offices work. And we also offer training in areas of soft skills or business skills.
You know, Kevin, New Horizons Computer Learning Center is a franchise business, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you approached it from a unique point of view, didn't you?
I did. It was almost by accident as opposed to by design. I actually was hired by the franchisor to run their company-owned locations back in 2006 that were located out here on the West Coast. Shortly after I arrived, the CEO of New Horizons Worldwide changed, and the new CEO came in with a new direction to refranchise these company-owned locations. And my job was to help make that transition possible. And in the course of that, I was entertaining bids for what was my job, and I thought that I might be better suited if I kept my job by buying my business as opposed to by selling myself out of a job.
Sort of a self-defense mechanism?
I'd like to think of it as that.
You know, one of the things that really struck me, and I don't want to run past it this early in the interview, is the 3 different areas of training. You know, when I think, prior to you and I talking a week or so ago, when I think of New Horizons Computer Learning Center, I think of strictly teach me how to run a computer program.
Right,
And really, you've got 3 different areas. Do you want to just sort of emphasize that a little bit more for our audience?
Sure. I think the area that you're talking about is what most people commonly think of as our core business. But to be fair, it really only represents about 35-40% of our business, and that would be the traditional desktop applications. That would be your training like Excel, Word, PowerPoint, your various email programs. And oddly enough, many people touch those programs every day. Very few people have a complete understanding of the full capabilities of those programs. And when they take a class and learn what the tool can do for them, they become much more efficient and productive in their day-to-day job. The second style that we focus on is that high-end IT training, whether it be networking such as Cisco or the Microsoft Windows Server classes, the security piece of the business such as the EC Council, Certified Ethical Hacker type of class, or even the basic How to Build a Computer class, the whole CompTIA suite of classes that we offer, whether it be A+, Net+, Security+ classes. Those are really geared for the IT professional. And the third and fastest growing area of our business is what we call soft skills or business skills. In this area, we really aren't touching computers at all, but we are teaching people in areas such as public speaking, public presentations of technical subjects, business writing, effective presentation skills. We also get into the area of Six Sigma training. We do a lean green belt and a lean black belt course. We offer project management training. So we can really touch a lot of different people in the same organization.
Excellent. That was a big surprise to me, and maybe it isn't to the rest of the audience, but I just wanted to make sure everybody was aware of the sort of the diversity of things that you really offer. So, you know, one of my favorite questions, and I told you I was going to ask you this, is, you know, what business experience has kind of shaped how you manage, how you lead your firm today?
Obviously, there's been a few of them. We tend to take a very transparent view of our business. I remember when I was a younger man many years ago working in larger corporations, I never really had a sense of what the end goal was. I was a small pawn in the big game, and I always thought it would have been nice if I had had a bigger perspective on how things were run. We try to be very transparent with our business on a monthly basis. We share our financials with the entire organization. We actually call an all-hands meeting on the second Monday of every month, and we share with everybody who attends the entire financial results of the prior month. We look at our profit, our loss. We look at the mix of our business. We review how each individual salesperson did against their goal. We look at how our instructors have done in terms of their evaluations by their students who have sat through their classes, and we share with everybody how the company is doing. When we're not doing well, everybody's very aware of why we're not doing well, and they tend to pull together to make sure we do well. And several months ago during the recession, it was a very tough time for us, and I think that this transparency really built a strong connection amongst the people. They felt it was their battle to fight, not just mine, and I think they appreciated it. And now that we've been able to withstand this and come out of this and be a stronger company as a result of it, they feel very proud that we've achieved this, and they look at it as their achievement, not the company's achievement.
That's amazing. How long have you been doing this, Kevin?
I started this the first month I took over the business as an owner, which would have been in June of 2007.
And do you have any recollection of what the reaction was that first month when you shared this much what would normally be called confidential information with the staff?
I think it would be safe to say there were a lot of stunned individuals. They were surprised they were getting the information. They, in many instances, didn't know how to comprehend or understand the information. So those first few months were a bit trying in terms of presenting P&L type of data to people that normally don't come across that in their life, explaining the difference between what an expense number was versus revenue versus sales. But once we got beyond that, I think that people grasped the complexities of what we're doing and really appreciated the transparency.
That's great. I applaud you for that effort, and not only for starting it, but for continuing it this long and continuing it in times that haven't been necessarily the easiest or the greatest to share financial data.
Well, I think that really helps people understand why you're making the decisions you're making. It's one thing to say times are tough, we need to lay off people, as opposed to show them, here are the financials, this is where we're struggling, these are the choices we have to make, what would you do? And in many instances, it's pretty clear what the choices are, and people can appreciate them, even if it adversely affects them.
Great. Well, look, one of the things I really was fascinated with that you and I had talked about was how your firm has responded to opportunities with the state and federal spending initiatives. Can you tell our audience a little bit more about that?
Certainly. One of the things we took advantage of probably about 2 years ago was the stimulus package that was being talked about. We had heard talk of it. We had anticipated what that was going to look like. But we also knew from past experience that it wasn't one of those programs that you could just show up and start taking advantage of. So we went through the trouble of becoming registered with the various organizations that are out there, the local one-stops, the workforce investment boards, the EDD offices, the VA offices. They all require you to be registered with them. They all have different application type packages and evaluation packages, and it's rather laborious to go through that whole process of becoming legitimate with them. And at that point, we also, about a year and a half ago, we decided that we were going to need to expand our skills on our staff, and that's when we recruited a grant writer. We did an executive search for an individual that had experience writing federal and state grant programs. We knew that was an area that we were going to be required to excel in, and none of us had that individual skill to go do it. So we did a search, and we found an individual that had had experience with county and city governments writing grants for them, and recruited her, hired her in, and as she will gladly tell you, that's probably been the best hire I've ever made.
Actually, in your office, I think she did tell me that.
Yeah, she's a very talented young lady.
And so what has that allowed you to do?
It's really made us unique in that as a training center, we now can go to market into two distinct paths. One is the traditional B2B or business-to-business model where we're selling to the enterprise. But the other avenue is it allows us to go after the individual career development student. In this economy, that student is the one who has been laid off. They've been outsized, downsized, wrong-sized. They find themselves in a midlife career change. One of the fortunate things that we have right now is IT is still the fastest growing segment of job opportunity in the workforce, and our training is focused along that whole area of IT training. We offer training in a number of different certification paths that people can proceed down. So we have the ability to go in and work with these agencies and offer them approved programs that really cater to their individual client, in this case the unemployed or underemployed worker. And we also have the benefit of working with that student by putting them in classes with our B2B clients and further helping them find employment opportunities after they complete their programs, in many instances, with our B2B clients.
Interesting. So that actually you sort of got a double whammy there. You've got the unemployed getting retrained in other job skills, and then you mix them in with people currently employed in those areas for them to sort of share knowledge, learning, and maybe get to know each other and create some kind of business relationship. Is that
That's
correct?
Pretty much it in a nutshell. It's really been a win-win. We are able to go to our enterprise clients and offer them, in essence, a free recruiting service. And everybody has a cost to recruit an individual. In this instance, they can let us know what that job description looks like. We employ a full-time placement specialist. She works with our students who've completed their certification programs and matches them with our open job recs. And we provide our B2B clients, you know, several resumes, depending on the job opportunity of individual students they can interview. And it keeps everybody happy. It's a win-win. We provide a very zero-cost recruiting service for our enterprise clients, and we provide, in many instances, career opportunities for our career development students.
So you really go beyond just the retraining. You're actually helping place them.
Yes, we are.
Okay. And this is all, you know, fits within the program of state and federal assisted programs and gives you some kind of grant or funding support. Is that how it works?
Right. Most of these programs have a placement goal. As you could appreciate, if the government is going to spend millions of dollars on a training program, they want to know that they're getting some return on that investment. And they would set goals in normal times that would be predominantly around the 80% level. So they would expect 80% of their students to be receiving some type of job placement after they complete the programs. Well, in these times, it's been a little bit more difficult. You know, people are aware of our double-digit unemployment we've experienced here in Orange County. That being said, we are still being able to place people between that 60 to 80% level on any given month. Looking at a meeting I recently went to with the Orange County Workforce Investment Board, I was in a room with 10 other schools that are, you know, peers to us in various areas, whether it be technology or truck driving or medical training. And our placement numbers were exceeded the cumulative placement of every other school in the room. So we feel very confident that not only are we placing our students, but we also have to look at the starting salary that we're placing our students at, and where the competition was averaging $13, $14 an hour, the statistics that we're able to report show that our students are averaging salaries in that $35 an hour range. So we're able to put people out there with a very livable wage here in Orange County.
Wow, both increased percentages of placement and significantly additional dollars for the person you're placing. That's great, great results.
Well, we're happy with them. We could always do better, but, you know, given this economy, we're pleased with the numbers right now.
And what's the future of these kinds of programs? Is this something that's about over, just getting started? Where do you think you are in this as an opportunity?
I think they are going to be evolving. I believe that some of the programs are cyclical. The funding is for a very specific purpose and intent. Some of these grants have a very finite life. If they are successful, the agencies will go back and ask for more money. We've had several of our grants extended and refunded because of the success of those programs. We've been the benefactor of other schools not being able to enroll students, let alone train them and place them, and as a result, we've had several dollars transferred to our programs to help us get more students in and consequently help more students. But I do see this as unfortunately or fortunately, depending on what side you're on, I see the economy requiring this stimulus for a few more years here.
Okay. So, Kevin, you know, no matter how good a business is doing, there's always issues, challenges, opportunities, maybe even problems, whatever you want to call it. What are some of the current unresolved issues that your firm's facing as it goes forward in this economy?
I think the largest single challenge that we face is recruiting and retaining good salespeople. There seems to be a dearth of individuals out there that want to put forth the effort required to really excel in the area of sales. Many people associate sales with some sort of negative stigma, which is unfortunate because at the end of the day, we are all salespeople in one form or another. But we've been working at this for several years now, and we've changed our approach to the type of profile we're looking for, and we think we might be onto something here, but only time will tell. But right now, that continues to be our biggest challenge is finding and retaining good, solid salespeople.
Okay. And, your firm's in the technology training market. How has the technology affected your company itself?
Well, it affects how we deliver our service. It constantly challenges us to go to new technologies. One of the traditional areas that we're getting ready to make a large technology change in today is the book. People take a class. They are used to getting a book when they walk in the door that is a textbook that addresses the class. We're looking at the social impacts of what's going on in the world today, as well as the technology issues, and we're in the process of migrating to what we call digital courseware, so that when students come in, no longer will they be given a book, but they'll be given a key so that they can download the courseware for that class. The courseware will have the OneNote feature built into it, so they can take their notes as if they were writing with a pen or pencil. And then when they leave our class, they'll be able to go to a FTP website and download that onto their own computer or print it out or put it on a thumb drive, whatever media they wish. But we won't be in the business of having the traditional paper book any longer.
Going to save a few trees there, huh?
We're hoping. We'll save a few trees. We'll certainly not be dealing with a book inventory issue, which is quite a challenge for us. And just make the environment a better place at the end of the day.
What about the issue of the sort of traditional classroom? I mean, traditionally people come to your facility, they sit in a classroom environment, they listen to an instructor, they participate on computers. Many businesses talk about getting away from this and doing everything over the internet. Do you see any move towards that in the teaching environment?
We are doing that today. We still offer our traditional instructor-led training in a traditional brick-and-mortar classroom. There is a large demand for that. Many of our competitors have tried to move away from that exclusively. I think we've been able to maintain a strong position in the marketplace because we haven't moved away from it. What we have done is we've embraced the new technology and we've combined it to play with our existing old-school technology. One example is what we call Connected Classroom. We have five physical locations throughout the Southland. We might be teaching a class in Anaheim. We have the ability to let a student attend our facility in San Diego and take that same class with that same instructor. We have a connected classroom with a plasma 52-inch monitor in that San Diego remote location. All the rooms are mic'd for sound so that nobody is typing or texting their messages. They're speaking like you and I are speaking here today. The remote instructor can hear them and communicate with them. The remote students can hear them and communicate with them. It keeps people off the highway, and it allows people to take advantage of the resources that are out there. We're not in a position where we have to have another instructor for the San Diego class. We also have taken that technology one step further and addressed the remote student. We might have somebody who lives up in Big Bear or Lake Arrowhead, and they really don't like coming off the mountain. And we're really not in a position to bring the training to them in the mountain, so we bring Mohammed to the mountain. In this case, we allow them to connect into this live class with a high-speed internet connection, and they can take our scheduled class from the comfort of their own home or their remote office.
Excellent. Interesting. Well, what kind of painful business lesson have you had in your career? That's a funny question, but we get some very interesting answers.
How much time do you have, right? Well, I think most recently when this current recession hit, just like many other companies in the market, we were in denial about how serious this recession was going to be for a long time. We thought it was a blip. We thought it was the summer turned down. And when we really hit that September-October time frame in 2008, we realized that the summer was done and we still hadn't seen an upturn in the economy. We had some difficult decisions to make. We had to do right-sizing of our own. We looked at non-essential jobs. We looked at people that were underperforming compared to their peer group and expectations. And we took that as an opportunity to lean out our organization. At the time, we had a high employment count of about 87 people. When we were finished this exercise, we had cut our head count down to 58 as our low point. Unfortunately, that wasn't enough. We really had to start looking at our expenses. And when you look at expenses, you cut back where you can. One of those areas was in the amenities that we offered our students. We had offered Otis Spunkmeyer chocolate chip cookies, freshly baked every day. We cut that back, and when you start looking at that, you think, well, that's not a lot, but over the course of a month, it was a few thousand dollars. We actually cut back on our free coffee. That was probably the single item that caused people the most consternation, but we saved about $9,000 to $10,000 a month in that area alone. And it allowed us to keep our prices at the same level they had been at for several years. We also had to make salary cuts. We had two 10% cuts, so people basically over the course of 90 days saw about a 20% salary reduction. That was probably the hardest thing I had to do, but I was really surprised when I announced that at an all-hands meeting, not really knowing what type of reception I would get with that. I was stunned to see a lot of people come up to me afterwards and thank me for having courage to make a difficult decision. They were happy to still be working, though be it at 80% or 20% less money, but 80% of salary is better than 100% of unemployed. And we have since reinstated all those cuts, and everybody's whole again.
That's great. So that's the action you had to take. How is this going to affect you? I mean, what did you learn from that that's going to shape how you look at things in the future?
I think that I was a bit reticent to make some of those decisions, thinking that there would be a lot of adverse reaction, but I was surprised that there really wasn't. People were much more understanding. They were appreciative to be able to work with you and become part of the solution as opposed to becoming part of the continued problem. I think that it would allow me to be a little bit more optimistic and perhaps pull the trigger a little bit sooner on some tougher decisions in the future. I was, in many instances, I was surprised that the employees were much more partners in this process as opposed to opposition to it.
Which probably speaks to your transparency that you talked about earlier in sharing financial information. Obviously, none of this came as a surprise to them then. They may not have liked it, but they obviously saw it coming.
I would agree with that. I don't believe there were any surprises. Obviously, a few people that we had to say goodbye to were disappointed, but we brought a few of those people back as the demand has come back. And today, we just celebrated our third-year anniversary owning the franchise. We had an all-hands company picnic at Knott's Berry Farm on Friday, and we're up to 92 employees right now, so we're bigger than we ever were, and people appreciate that.
Way to go. Well, I have to tell you, I was with you all the way in this this lesson until you got to affecting me where it really matters, and that was with my coffee and chocolate chip cookies. So, well, look, as we kind of wrap things up here, Kevin, what else about you or your firm have we not talked about today that you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, I try to use the analogy of the automobile industry. A lot of people wonder, why training? Why do I need training? And I give them the story about in the automotive industry, the automaker builds a car. The automaker doesn't necessarily care if you know how to drive a car. And we're at a very, very fast pace of technological change right now. The Microsofts of the world are bombarding us with new technologies, new innovations, whether it be the Apple iPad, whether it be the cloud computing technology we're going to be dealing with here. But the people in the firms that are coming up with these innovations don't necessarily take into account that the rest of us lay people have to learn how to implement these new technologies in our day-to-day life. And that's where we come in. We take that hard technology decision and we teach people how to use it and implement it with their everyday life, whether it be in a business environment or personal environment, so that they're more efficient and better equipped to use the new technology to hopefully live a better life.
And just as sort of a final point, where do you see the firm going in the next 5 years?
I think we have an awful lot of growth to do right here in the Southland. I believe that as we expand the areas that we can offer training in, there's a lot more opportunity for us in a lot of different organizations. We're also very bullish on the opportunity to expand our footprint into other geographical areas. We're looking at other open territories that currently don't have a New Horizons, or perhaps acquiring other existing New Horizons franchisees and folding them into our family and taking advantage of the economies of scale that would offer us.
Well, great. Kevin, it's been great having you here today and hearing you share your insights and how you manage, which has obviously been extremely successful. How does someone get in touch with you or your firm to learn more about what we've talked about here today?
Well, they can contact us through our website. That would be www.nhsocal.com. That's nhsocal.com. Or they can reach us here in Orange County at 714-221-3100.
Great. Kevin, thank you very much for joining us here on Critical Mass, and express our thanks to Rebecca also for helping us get this set up and working with you. Made it very easy.
Very good. We thank you very much for the opportunity, and we look forward to working with you in the future.
Great. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. Well, there you go. We've just been listening to Kevin Landry of New Horizons Computer Learning Center. Hey, who said things aren't going well in Orange County? They had to cut back, but if you listen to him, it sounds like the recession's over. Their company's growing. They've added back. They're back to an all-time high in number of employees and have a very, very positive outlook within the firm in terms of morale and business opportunities. So that's fantastic. And along those same lines, you might just want to check our website, criticalmassforbusiness.com, and get the information about our upcoming executive conference, August 11th at the Center Club. We've got a stellar panel that's going to be talking about this very issue about growth in today's environment. You just heard sort of some opening remarks there from Kevin about what they've done about it. Well, look, our next guest is Carrie G., and I'm going to have to ask her to pronounce her last name. She's told me, but I don't get it right. She is the owner of Pridea. Again, I'm going to check her with that. But I do know that she's an expert in public relations, public speaking, and she helps business executives create and deliver PR strategies through public speaking. So, Kerry, welcome to Critical Mass, and please, I'm embarrassed, help me with the pronunciation of both your name and the company name.
Well, thank you so much for this beautiful opportunity. It's Kerry G., and the last name is Semmelman. And the name of my public relations public speaking firm is Pridea, so you got that perfectly.
50-50. If I was playing baseball, I'd be okay, huh?
Yep, you sure would.
Well, look, thank you very much for being with us here today. Really exciting to hear you talk, and personally, I'm very interested. We hear more and more about social networking, and people tend to think this means something where we're remotely connected without ever seeing people, and of course, you're talking about just the opposite. You're talking about getting in front of real live people and using your voice to communicate. So
exactly.
Can't wait to hear what you have to say. Start out by telling our audience a little bit about your path before the firm.
Well, believe it or not, Doug, my initial career goal was to become the first woman coach of the Los Angeles Rams. And like no other sport, football players have what I call strategic mini meetings. You know, hundreds of times during a game, as they get into a huddle in between nearly every play, they strategize and they call out the next one or two plays. And I remember being so drawn into the strategic planning and also the role that the coach had as a communications, you know, skills and the impact it had on their team and the environment. I also was really interested on how teams and the whole team process was marketed and promoted. So many years ago, I decided to pursue two college degrees, and one was in recreation leadership to teach me about that coaching, and one was in journalism with a public relations emphasis. So after the past, over the past 27 years, I've served as a PR director for several worthy major nonprofits like the Orange County Community Foundation, the California Department of Education, and I also volunteered my services to many organizations. And something that was really satisfying as part of this journey leading up to Pridea was, and even after, as I served as an adjunct professor at Chapman University, where I taught for 4 years, PR and business presentation upper division courses, and the students were just hungry to learn on how to be successful. So first, I just want to encourage the listening audience of executives and CEOs to at least one time in their life teach students within a classroom. I found it to be a win-win-win. I mean, it was a win for the students, a win for the person like me or the CEO, and a win for the community and economy. So, but I will tell you, my real turning point of leading up to this path of starting this communications consulting firm is a bit bittersweet. My mom was unfortunately dying from cancer, and she was sharing with me all the things she wished she had done, that she wished she had time to do in her life. And later that night, I remember going home, and I thought to myself, and it's a pretty intense question to ask, but what if I was dying? What would I wish I had done? So by the morning, I decided I would begin a communications consulting firm. It's a dream of mine. And at first, it was part-time while I held down a full-time job, and then it grew to a full-time business. And because I had already been busy delivering over 100 keynote addresses and inspiring workshops for free, I saw a need to add the speaking coaching within my, you know, offerings, and the clients have loved it. So, you know, I wanted to tell you the idea of where Pridea, the name, came from, even though it's a tongue twister, is that right from the beginning, my entire professional purpose was to help people succeed who had pride in their ideas. That's what the ingredient was. I needed them to know, that, you know, I needed to see that they had pride in their ideas. And it's just been an extremely rewarding journey all along with Pridea and working with so many wonderful clients.
What a great start to today's conversation. But I have to ask, did you ever get to coach?
You know, I coach my clients in public speaking and in public relations, and I use a lot of analogies and strategies from all the sports. But I'm hoping to, you know, coach a little league team or some team. Unfortunately, you know, the Rams left, and they had an owner that some people said was a little hard to work with. So I never did that, but it's never too late. I may do that in my retirement.
I have the feeling, Kerry, that if you set it as a goal, it's going to happen. So
yeah, thank you.
Well, look, tell us a little bit more about your firm. Who are your clients? How do you find your clients? And what are the problems that you solve for them?
Well, first of all, you know, my clients and prospective clients always say that I take a different approach. I mean, in my very first, what I call an intake meeting with them, I ask a question, And they say they've never heard the type of questions I ask them. And amid everything I need to know that probably many other PR consultants and firms ask, what's most important to me is to know what I call their professional legacy. What mark do they want to leave in the world? You know, what is the legacy they and their company or their nonprofit wants to leave? And then after that, I have three main roles for them. I see myself as a detective on their behalf, and my job is to dig up all the clues and evidence so that I can spotlight the best of what they do. And then every PR strategy that I create must help them achieve exactly what their mission statement states. I mean, I memorize their mission statement. It becomes part of my mission statement. And then I really need to report their news. And the second part of it, which is more of the harder thing, is I also have to create newsworthiness for them to draw their target audience in. So I've had, I've had all different types of clients. I remember one of my first clients was a San Diego-based company called Lolo, and they made good old-fashioned board games with a fulfilled promise that every game would make everyone in the family of all ages smile and laugh, and to me that was rewarding. I've worked with Boeing. I've worked with Allergan. One of the clients I've had the longest, I've worked with Buono's. It's a line of Italian restaurants, and you can hear just by one what I'll never forget this. The owner of Buono's said to me that giving back to the communities we do business in is as important to us as succeeding in business. And I remember that because that's the kind of client I love to work with and represent. And, you know, they love having me work with them because it is all about your professional legacy. Oh.
Well, that's, I've not heard that before, and I'm very intrigued by it. I'm not going to forget that. That's great. Well, you know, one of the questions that I like to ask all of our guests is, you know, we all have, as we go through our career, there's some business experience that kind of becomes a turning point and kind of defines how we decide to lead and work with our staff or our clients. What has that been for you?
You know, it's interesting. It actually happened early on. It was the day that I sat down and said, okay, what's my job title? You know, when we go and work for other people, we have a job title that they bestow upon us. But now it was, what is my job title? And after much thought, I chose PR go-getter because I realized, what is that ingredient you need to have? And I said, you have to strategically always be pursuing. You always have to go after. You always have to move towards, you know, the best people, the best ideas, the best strategies. But with that, you need to also slow down long enough to evaluate. You need to notice the ever-changing environment so you can reconfigure. You need to take care of your own well-being. And so you got to be a go-getter for others, and then you have to be a go-getter for yourself. And so really that, you know, that was the main thing. I also realized that just like in sports, you know, you have people that scout to get the right team players. And so I scouted for a long time, and I chose people with proven track records that were equally as passionate about helping make the world a better place as I was. And I will tell you too, though, I did something else. You know, there's another group out there that doesn't have as much experience, and those are these college interns. And I thought to myself, you know, I could just surround myself with the people who have proven track records, but I also want to bring in superstars that are interns. And whether it was that they were a superstar when they came to me, or it was from learning from me and experimenting and making those mistakes and learning how to fix them, I just encourage all executives and small business owners to utilize college interns because it'll reap so many rewards. And that really has impacted how I run and lead my firm today.
Wonderful. You know, you mentioned something about having to work with your clients to generate something that's sort of PR worthy. Those weren't your exact words, but maybe that'll help you. I'm just curious whether it's really that you have to help them generate something or whether you find most of the time you're helping them identify the things that are PR worthy that they've just sort of taken for granted. What's your
That's a really good question because it's actually one of the biggest challenges in PR. We report the news and we also look for news. And so I'd say it's 50-50. I mean, some companies, they just have so many newsworthy things happening every day and there's not enough time to report it all. And then there's some where they have hardly any and they hire me and they say, all right, do my PR. And I do the detective work and everything I look at is not different from how somebody else does it. So then our job is to show, you know, to say, okay, here are some ways to differentiate you. And sometimes they go, oh, you know, I do that. I just hadn't told you. But a lot of times it's us creating. I mean, I built a story, and it's sincere. It's not making it up, but it's something that draws attention. I build on what they've done well, and I pull it all together to make something extremely newsworthy.
Okay, which is a real skill in itself.
Mm-hmm. It is. And well, it's something I really enjoy doing. I mean, it's very, it is creative, but it's not handed to you on a silver platter. You got to look for it. And you have to have a client who's willing then to act on it. That's the challenge. I've had clients where I've shared with them, well, here's what I'm suggesting you do. And on it, here's what I will do. Here are my strategies. Here's my PR tactics. Here's how we're going to evaluate it. Here's the research I put into it to make sure it's going to work. But then they have to be willing to take action on it. And some clients are, and some haven't been.
Terry, have you noticed any difference in your clients' attitudes in this difficult economic times that we've been going through? Any change from the way they were behaving about PR in the good times?
Yes. I mean, I saw it in my own business and with many other consultants. Just like in the olden days when a lot of people that put their money into advertising thinking that was the silver bullet, and then many of them saw that they lost money or it wasn't successful or their businesses failed. A lot of people are putting a lot of their dollars into social media, which I definitely have good thoughts about that and some concerns. But my business started to show the difference. I mean, clients that had been with me or new clients had shifted funds or weren't able to invest the money that they had put in that budget for PR marketing. And so I came up with some new innovative initiatives to keep my business afloat, all the while keeping some very wonderful clients as well.
Great. Well, can you share with our audience sort of a key lesson about public speaking as it pertains to business executives? I mean, that's a very broad question, but I'm sure you've got a dozen answers to that.
I do so many trainings, that you know, hours of training, so that is a very good question. I will tell you that I'm going to say what I see as the biggest mistake that business executives and most speakers make, whether they're in a staff meeting, whether they're in a big group, you know, whether they're talking to the media or they're talking in a keynote address. And what it is that people tend to talk about themselves and what their business or company does. That's the first thing out of their mouth. And within all actuality, since every talk needs to always be about your audience, always about your audience, the first words out of your mouth need to address the issue, the challenge, the situation that the audience is facing. And they came to hear the with them. I'm sure you've heard that. What's in it for me? So actually the first step of connecting and persuading an audience to take the desired action you want them to take is to first give them some hard facts about the topic at hand, you know, some statistics, some data. Let them know you can relate to them. Hey, you know the problem at hand. And then to draw them in emotionally. And there's so many techniques I teach people on how to draw people in emotionally. And that, once you have the hard facts and the emotion, you've just talked to both sides of their brain. A few steps later is what it's called, I call the credibility step in the formula. That's when you start talking about yourself and your company. But that needs to be towards the end before you call for action. Unfortunately, too many people put it up at the beginning and they talk so much about themselves. They never get to what the people came to learn and to talk and to get hope and to see a resolution. You'll see you're going to draw a lot more people in more easily if you put that formula in place. The credibility goes towards the end. Hard facts, emotion, uniting with the audience is what you need to do up front.
That is that's worth the price of admission today. Thank you very much for that. You know,
my pleasure.
You're
my
absolutely
pleasure.
Right. We all tend to talk about, you know, I'm so fascinating. Don't you want to hear about me? When really what is really fascinating is the audience's issues.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That is a great lesson there. You know, you made one comment that I don't want to rush over, and you used the word public speaking, and you said when talking to staff, and I just, it sort of caught me, because I realized the minute somebody says public speaking, I think of talking to an audience in a venue, a hotel room, a big meeting, and yet public speaking, as you're talking about it, is even internal when we're talking to our own staff.
Definitely. Every time you have an audience, you have to think about their needs, put the audience first. And when you're talking to yourself or you're with friends, colleagues, a social gathering, just talking with people, But speaking has a lot of strategy, and you better be thinking about your audience, you know, when you stand up and address them.
But honestly, Carrie, do you find many of your clients really asking for help and how to talk to their staff, or are they primarily focusing how to talk to those customers and prospects instead?
I think it's a mixture. The majority, you're right, the majority is how to communicate effectively and meet the desired results with the external audience. However, I never let a client leave my training without them understanding the importance of doing that also for their staff.
You know, I don't know if you had a chance to listen while you were waiting to come on the air here, but we just talked to Kevin Landry of New Horizons Computer Learning Center, and one of the big points he was making is his monthly all-hands meeting where he communicates with his staff the total financial results of the company. And it sort of coincides with what you're saying about communicating with staff and being prepared and really doing a good job of speaking to the audience.
Very true.
So what advice do you have for our audience as it pertains to media interviews and preparing for them? That's got to be the scariest thing for most people.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I will first say that if you're anxious about it or scared, that's good, because somebody who has no fear of it, it shows, you can hear it in their voice, they're not connected to it, they don't feel it's as important. And so it's a good thing that people have anxiety about it. It just means you care. But I will say that, you know, I was really interested when the LeBron James announcement was made. And I saw an article where a journalist wrote, "No self-respecting news gatherer organization ever lets the subject take control of an interview." And, you know, I found this quote so interesting because I train the executives to handle media interview. I show them how to take control, or at least how to be in control, and definitely how not to be out of, you know, not out of control. So the executive has total control of what he or she chooses to share. Yet all the while, you got to be true to the interviewer and respectful of his, you know, her time as a role. And so the first thing is come in with knowing what you want to say. And, you know, I will say that one of the things I do, and this is unique because there's a lot of easy tips. You don't repeat a negative. Yeah, you know, there's just so many things. You never do anything off the record because everything is on the record, even if you think it's off the record. But here's something that I really challenge everyone out there to, you know, to strive to do. I do a visualization with my clients, and you know, maybe others do visualization, but I haven't met one that does this. There's a caveat. When I have people do a visualization, I actually have them visualize something going wrong during the experience. The microphone didn't work. The person asked you a question that you weren't at all expecting, you know, the way it's worded, whatever. And I have them actually in their visualization while they're preparing and practicing handle that situation that went wrong, and be poised during that and rebound. And I, you know, I do this because rarely things go smoothly. And as much as I believe people can prepare, they have the power of intention for it to go well, they've got the power of positive thinking to go well, the bottom line is that sometimes things don't. I'd rather people be cool and poised when something may not go their way than to compromise their disposition at any time during the media interview or presentation. I once fell over a microphone, and I just started dancing with it and tied it in beautifully to the talk. And that probably was the most memorable moment, not because I fell over a microphone, but because how I rebounded and the message I made to the audience because of it. And so if I hadn't practiced on some things maybe not going exactly as I had liked, when that happened, I might have not been very poised. However, I rebounded and gave them what they came to listen to and what to learn from. And it was a great presentation.
Yeah.
Great. Well, you know, I said that when business started to falter a bit because of the economy, I decided to launch an initiative, a good news initiative called My Memory Catcher. And it's all about capturing people's happiest moments. And there's just too much bad news in the headlines. And we all have good news. We just don't remember it sometimes. And we need to bring those happiness headlines up into our lives and think about them. So one of the things I do as a journalist is I'm a happiness historian. And I would love to offer to the listening audience that the first 50 people that go to my website and go into the contact us section and email me during the week of July 13, 2010, I will do a drawing, and three of those people will have a happiness historian for a month to interview them and capture their happiest, most enjoyable moments they see through the eyes of their children, their spouse, their best friend, whomever, and I'm going to help bring the good news of their life up to the surface and give it back to them in writing in a journal. And so they would go to www.mymemorycatcher.net, and it's specifically .net because I help people capture their happiness. So that's the way they can get hold of me, through My Memory Catcher, www.mymemorycatcher.net. And then my PR firm is www.pridea.com. And anybody has a question or want to bounce anything off me, I'm all about helping make the world a better place. And if I can help add pride to your ideas, that would be my passion and my love.
And take over the interview. You talked about having control of the media, and you definitely did. Thank you for being such a wonderful guest today. And once more, can you just share with the audience, how do they get a hold of you again?
All right. Well, for Pridea, it's www.pridea.com. And that's P as in Paul, R-I-D as in dog, E-A, the words pride and idea together, www.pridea.com. And the other is www.mymemorycatcher.net.
Okay. And for my own benefit, and I don't want to short you at all here, the offer that you made, can you repeat that once more for our audience?
Sure. With this My Memory Catcher Happiness Historian initiative I began when the market started to slow down and I needed to find other ways to generate good business and plus keep true to my passion of creating good news in the world, I am offering the first 50 people that that submit on the Contact Us page of MyMemoryCatcher.net, I will do a drawing, and three of those people will receive a private happiness historian where I will interview you over the course of a month, and you will share through a really enjoyable process your happiest, most enjoyable, funny moments, and I will get those down in glorious detail as a good journalist does and give those back to you in a journal. It makes just a great way to celebrate the happiness in your life and share good news with others.
What a wonderful gift. What a wonderful gift. Well, thank you very much for extending that to our audience, and thank you very much for being with us today, and for being such a professional that you step right in and play both sides of the mic, the interviewee and the interviewer.
My pleasure, and Doug, thank you for what you do. I think this is a great platform for CEOs, executives, business owners like myself to grow and to be more passionate and to help others. So what you're doing is terrific. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being with us today.
All righty.
Have a good day. And as we move forward, I will take our guest today, Carrie G. of Pridea. I'll take her advice, and before tomorrow's broadcast, I'm going to practice what could go wrong and how I'm going to handle it, and see what we can do. Isn't technology wonderful? We just never really know what's going to go on. Well, let me just, as we're getting ready to sign off, reminding you that in addition to the radio show, in addition to our executive forums done through RenaissanceExecutiveForums.com, we also offer executive coaching services and employee development programs. We've been working with CEOs and business owners for 16 years here in the Orange County area. I'm a master certified coach, and much like Carrie, I really get a tremendous amount of satisfaction out of working with executives, helping them clarify what their mission is, what their goals are, and working with them to better articulate that and create the kind of bonded, committed team that we're all looking for in business today. So you can learn more about all of those things by going to our website, www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. That's criticalmass, for F-O-R, business.com. This is Doug Gefeller reminding you to be sure to tune in tomorrow, 4 o'clock Wednesday. We're going to have two great guests on the show. I wish you could do more than just listen. We're going to have Jimmy Cleland of Blizzard Beer Systems. Now, how can you go wrong talking about Blizzard Beer? And we're going to talk to Christine Hernandez, who is the owner of Attorney Assisted and a registered legal document assistant. So, we're going to go from the light to the heavy, from the foam to the straight, hard stuff. Be sure to tune in. This is Doug Gefeller wishing you better business decisions.